Hey, y'all, Uncle Jimmy here. When you speak for yourself, you're forced to think for yourself. And when you think for yourself, the sports world looks different. In order to enjoy this podcast and this show, you need to have the courage to look at the world from alternative points of view and not be offended when you disagree. Speak for Yourself isn't your Twitter, Facebook, or Instagram feed. SFY tells you what you need to hear and not what you want to hear. So, welcome aboard, buckle up, and enjoy the ride.
We start with the NFL. All right, Andy Reid and Aaron Rodgers. Not too many people connect this coach to this quarterback, but here we are, 48 hours from the championship Sunday, and the two ARs have the most riding on this weekend's outcomes. Their legacies will be significantly burnished or diminished by whatever transpires in the AFC and NFC championship games. Reid, the Chiefs coach, and Rodgers, the Packers quarterback, are two of the NFL's most respected combatants, but they're also considered underachievers. Reid is widely viewed as the best coach never to win a Super Bowl. He's advanced to the NFL's biggest game just once, winning one of the six conference championship games he's coached. Rodgers is widely viewed as the most talented quarterback in NFL history, while Tom Brady and Peyton Manning advanced to and won multiple Super Bowls. Rodgers has made it to the big game just once, winning one of the three NFC championships he's quarterbacked. What's worse, Rodgers' QB rating in those three games is 70.5, and he's tossed more interceptions than touchdowns, 5-4. My point is, Sunday's games are far more important for Andy Reid and Aaron Rodgers than anyone else involved. Their reputations will be greatly impacted by what they do against the Tennessee Titans and the San Francisco 49ers, respectively. A second Super Bowl appearance for Reid would change the narrative around him. People don't call Marv Levy and Bud Grant the best coaches never to win a Super Bowl. They call Levy and Grant great Hall of Fame coaches. Leading multiple teams to the Super Bowl isn't as good as winning a Super Bowl, but it eliminates the conversation of underachievement. Only six coaches have led multiple teams to the Super Bowl: Don Shula, Bill Parcells, Dick Vermeil, Dan Reeves, Mike Holmgren, and John Fox. 15 years ago, Reid led the Philadelphia Eagles to the Super Bowl. They lost a heartbreaker to the Patriots 24-21. Now, if the Chiefs lose on Sunday, if they lose at home as a touchdown favorite to a Titans team that eked into the playoffs as a 6 seed, well, Andy Reid's reputation is going to suffer a massive hit. He'll be the passing version of Chuck Knox and Marty Schottenheimer. Reid will be a season away from getting pushed out in Kansas City. The stakes aren't quite as high for Aaron Rodgers. He won the lone Super Bowl he played in, and the Packers are 7.5-point underdogs to the 49ers. No one realistically expects the Packers to win on Sunday. But a 1-3 record in the NFC Championship would haunt Rodgers, especially if he performs as poorly as he has in previous championship games. Rather than debating whether he's on the same level as Brady and Manning, the question will become, did Drew Brees get more out of his talent than Aaron Rodgers? Is Aaron Rodgers football's Will Chamberlain, a freaky talent with a quirky personality that undermined his ability to win at the highest level? This Sunday is a tale of two ARs. Will they enhance or diminish their reputations? All right, joining the desk now are former Patriots offensive lineman Rich Auenberger and the Hall of Famer and GOAT candidate Eric Dickerson. Marcellus, get us rolling. Would a lost Sunday diminish how you view Andy Reid?
No. No, it would not. And I usually don't swim in the legacy waters, the professional legacy waters. Gives too much power to the people out there in the masses who have their own thoughts and expectations on your accomplishments, and I see how that can go awry. Look at Drew Pearson right now, still holding his happiness hostage, waiting on other people to think something of his own success. So I usually don't swim in these waters, but let's dance in this water and not get wet. I'm looking at this situation with Andy Reid as Andy Reid's in a no-lose situation. He is 1-5 in championship games. I don't know if anything profound comes if he goes 1-6. Like, there's not a huge loss of yardage in terms of his legacy if he goes 1-6. As a matter of fact, I would sit there and say, that's Andy Reid, going into a game as a favorite once again and not coming out victorious in that. Three of the five previous championship game losses have come as the home number one seed. They're not even a number one seed in this situation. And they weren't even supposed to be in this pairing because of the loss of week 17, Miami, New England. So all I'm saying is, what will I learn about Andy Reid if he loses? Nothing. That's what Andy Reid does in these situations. But there is a huge bonus, kind of the same mindset with the combine, where they say it shouldn't hurt you, but it sure can help you. If he goes out there and takes care of business, we can add to his legacy, but I don't think we're going to take away.
I look at this situation much like I look at the Drew Pearson situation. Why do we have to wait for Hall of Fame voters to tell us that Andy Reid's great? He's the winningest coach without a championship, without a Super Bowl win. He's great. He's great. And Andy, if you're listening, you're great. I said it to Drew yesterday. I'll say it to Andy today. Here's the deal. Like, Marv Levy and Bud Grant, like, when we are talking about the greats who have won at the highest level, don't get me wrong, some of those guys needed the Super Bowl to push them over that edge. And you mentioned 1-5 in championship games. Arriving at the Final Four is something that college basketball teams hang in their rafters for all of eternity. Isn't it important just to get to a championship round? Now, I understand it isn't the NFL championship, but it is a conference championship. And I will never look at his inability to clear that final hurdle to diminish the quality of career that he's compiled over.
There's like 200 college basketball, Division I college basketball teams. There's 32 NFL teams. Getting to the Final Four isn't quite as impressive as getting to the NCAA Final Four. But anyway, I'm sorry. Go ahead, E.G.
Well, diminish, yes and no. I think it would hurt a little. I think it would hurt some. Even as I think as your own ego goes. And I look at Andy Reid. I look at Bill Belichick as one. I look at Andy Reid as two. Because Andy Reid has developed so many great players. I mean, he really has. I mean, when I look at what he's done
and coaches.
I mean, let's go to coaches, the coaching tree. Let's go Doug Peterson. Yeah, I mean, yeah. Super Bowl. Look at Bill Belichick. No wonder that's Super Bowl. I mean, I look at what he's done for Mahomes. Mahomes, you never really heard about him much in college at Texas Tech. But all of a sudden, when he gets under Andy Reid moved up to get him. Man, all of a sudden, God, why this guy Mahomes come? Where'd he come from? You think about what he did for Michael Vick's career. You know, when Michael Vick came back, you know. It might have even had Michael Vick when he came out of college. What he did for Donovan McNabb, who's possibly, you know, on the cusp of being a Hall of Famer. You know, when he got to Philly, they didn't have much. They got T.O. there. They went to the Super Bowl, got beat by the Patriots. T.O. with a broken leg. So Andy Reid, to me, is... he's that guy, but I think that not winning a Super Bowl, especially in Kansas City, he's been there so long, people are like, come on, Andy, it's your time. When you going to do it?
Thank you, Eric, and you've led me to my point. I mean, the man's looking at a layup right here. A 9-7 Tennessee team coming in here, a quarterback they pulled out of Miami off the bench. They're a 7-point favorite at home. For those of us that, you know, have long ties to Kansas City, we've had a lot of layups since 1970, since Lynn Dawson and Otis Taylor, and they've all been blown. And if Andy Reid blows another layup here, I'm sorry, for Chiefs fans, and I just think for football fans, because you got guys like Rich that are tossing around the word great on a guy that maybe he deserves it, but if he goes 1-6 in conference championship games, I'm just sorry. We can't continue to just throw this great label around on Andy Reid. It's Marty Schottenheimer. Chuck Knox. Chuck Knox, one of my favorite coaches of all time. I grew up a Rams fan. But he's not great. He's a guy that did a lot of great things in the regular season and struggled in the postseason. Yeah, I think Andy Reid gets a huge ding if he loses this game. And I think he gets a huge bump up if he makes it to his second Super Bowl.
Yeah, but I get it. You're a KC fan, man, and you're mapping your desires on his coaching resume, which is putting those expectations to a place where you think great is higher than I think great is. I'm with you. I think he's already earned the title of being great as a coach. But let me say this, even if you disagree with that, Andy Reid in those 6 championship games has been favored 5 times. And only won once. So guess what? Andy Reid's already shown you that more times than not, he's going to miss that layup. So why is now you're going to look at this player and say, he can't
this
make
this is the
layup.
Easiest layup he's had.
Mm. I don't
this is
know.
The Tennessee Titans. Oh, I know Derrick Henry's great.
No.
The record doesn't show how hot you are.
They beat
how
them
good
this year.
You are. The record doesn't show that. They the are, Giants of 9-7.
Exactly.
They're supposed to be playing the Baltimore Ravens right now, who clearly during the regular season showed they were the best team in football team.
Who clearly were not better than the Tennessee Titans.
They
not on that side.
Supposedly.
Supposedly.
You get Bill Belichick and Tom Brady knocked out of this. You got a second, third-year coach here in Mike Vrabel with a damn quarterback the Dolphins gave up on. You can't blow it. And you have Patrick Mahomes, Tyreek Hill, Travis Kelce.
I was a part of a team that blew it. I went to the Super
no
Bowl.
No wonder you
back into 2011. That regular season, we beat the Giants. We beat them in the preseason. And guess what? They beat us in the Super Bowl. That was a team that got hot late.
Right.
And they rode that inertia into the postseason. They upset the entire apple cart. And they took down Brady and an unhealthy Gronkowski. Everybody knows how that game would have been had that ankle been right. But the point is, they won. And so when you look at the Chiefs right now, are they vulnerable? Well, they have explosive weapons everywhere. But they're playing against the hottest team in football right now.
And they can't stop the run. The Chiefs can't stop the run.
They cannot stop the run.
No Jones up front. It could be an issue.
Andy,
be real.
Don't ignore calf. These guys, Andy. I'm going to be in your ass on Monday if we lose this
game. How did it go in the regular season? I want to answer that. Answer that with like, how'd it go? How'd it go in the regular season?
Let's move to here, Rob. Would a poor performance and loss diminish how you view Aaron Rodgers?
No. Aaron Rodgers is comparable to Andy Reid. He's been getting this pass, if you want to talk about the level of criticism. But it's interesting, in these moments, he's had failing moments as well. And he's still looked at as the most talented quarterback ever and one of the GOATs potentially. So how did he get to that place? He didn't get to that place from these moments. He is 1-2 in his championship games with a 70 quarterback rating. So for somehow, some way, he's not only lost more than one, but also underperformed in those moments, and no one is holding him accountable for that. So why would we start now? I'm just using our past behavior and assessment of Aaron Rodgers to say, it's not going to change our view. He's still the most talented, one of the GOATs.
Well, yeah, I agree with you. Ultimately, it comes down to who is Aaron Rodgers? He's a Super Bowl champion, a two-time MVP. He's been one of the greatest talents we've ever seen at this quarterback position, maybe the greatest talent at the quarterback position. Tom Brady is much more accomplished, but if you're building a quarterback, this is who you build, mobile, capable outside the pocket and within, a rocket for an arm, a scientist brain. He's done it all. He has much less to prove than maybe even an Andy Reid as far as Hall of Fame is concerned. But I look at this game and I say, if they fail to beat the 49ers, it's a failure of the complementary pieces around Aaron Rodgers. He was sacked five
Don't
times.
Don't eliminate the Andy has a poor performance. If he's part of the reason they lose, it doesn't change your opinion.
Well, his stat line looked pretty abysmal against the Niners first time around, but he was harassed. He was sacked five times, and sometimes you have to hold the ball when your receivers aren't getting
separation. I didn't say if his stats were poor. I said if his performance was poor.
That's fair. Look, will it diminish what I think of his career in total? No. One poor outing, even if it's in a championship game.
We're moving the goalposts.
I
love you to death. Aaron Rodgers?
Well, no.
Okay.
All right.
No, okay. I'm good enough. Performances. Right.
You said a guy who's probably the most, you say talented. Aaron Rodgers, one of the most talented quarterbacks. I think about a guy that I came out in the draft with, John Elway, who was started off 0-3 in Super Bowls. The last two he won. Why did he win those Super Bowls?
Because he's
Terrell.
Terrell. Okay, now, matter of fact, in that first Super Bowl, you know what his stats were? 12 for 23, 123.
Hold on. What did you say?
123 yards and a pick.
John.
And a pick. You know what TD had? What
did he do?
130, 157. three TDs. Mm. That's the difference. Mm. I mean, now let's go to Aaron Rodgers. Aaron Rodgers has never really had a strong cast. Like a strong cast. This year he has a running game in Aaron Jones. I'm not comparing him to TD at all. Yeah. You know, he's got a receiver. You know, he's got Dante Adams as a receiver, but they don't have a lot of weapons. That defense to me is really suspect. But what I think anybody looks at Aaron Rodgers is that this guy's dangerous all the time.
Yes.
You know, they probably, I'm taking the Niners. I think they're going to lose this football game. But with Aaron Rodgers, you always have a chance.
Well, if he has a poor performance and they lose, will it change your view of him?
You read the same thing. No, it will not.
And I just want to add here, because I'm very defensive of John Elway slander.
Yeah, thank
you. And so, you know what? I'm not even going to deal with that. I'm just going to go straight here.
I'm going to go straight here with Aaron Rodgers.
Look, man, and I love the guy. He's talented. But we're looking at, if he loses this game, he's Wilt Chamberlain. And Tom Brady continues to be a bigger and bigger Bill Russell. And I'm just sorry, as the basketball discussion has moved over the last 20, you almost don't even hear Wilt Chamberlain's name anymore. You hear about the 100-point game. But when they start talking about the all-time greats, people don't talk about Wilt Chamberlain. He's really kind of fallen out of the top 10 of that discussion. And it's mostly he had the 100-point game and he's the most talented guy. But he underachieved. And again, that's where I think Aaron Rodgers moves in jeopardy of, like, hey, for a while he was on the same track as Brady and Manning and a definite top 10 quarterback of all time. He loses this game. I think guys like Colin Cowherd and Skip Bayless keep beating that drum that, you know, A. Rodgers is a little overrated.
Hey, the only thing is, they're not supposed to win this game.
But again, we're talking about poor performance.
Okay,
as well.
Poor performance within that, because he's been poor in championship games all the time. If you look at it, only two teams in Super Bowl history have actually showed up in the Super Bowl because they were outgained in the regular season. Two teams. And this is the next team that was outgained in the Super Bowl, the Green Bay Packers in the regular season. You think they're going to be the third team that actually adds to that? I don't see it happening. Well, I see this is a team that is
overachieved. For them to lose this game with Aaron Rodgers not diminishing his reputation at all. If he balls out and they get beat 35-28, and Aaron had a terrific game, all they need is another piece this offseason, and they'll be competitive with the 49ers. But if he plays poorly and comes in with a 70 quarterback rating, no TDs, and, you know, only completes 55% of his passes.
But loses,
people are going to
knock. But that doesn't coincide with your Wilt Chamberlain, Bill Russell, because Wilt Chamberlain always had better numbers than Bill Russell, but came up short.
Not always. Not in the biggest.
What?
And
on
not the, in the biggest
on the
game.
Other side of this weekend, I really think if he loses this game, what we're going to be saying is Aaron needs help. We're not going to say the Packers need a new quarterback. We're going to say surround him with more talent.
Everybody has to do taxes, and yet not everybody feels comfortable doing taxes, which doesn't seem right. Especially when you consider all the amazing things these same people accomplish every day of their lives. TurboTax believes that, with the right tools and encouragement, people can be good at anything. Yes, even taxes. And to help people feel more comfortable with the tax process, TurboTax Live gives you personal access to experienced CPAs and EAs who are there for you even on nights and weekends. And they're happy to go through your return with you line by line to double check that you've done everything right, so you can be sure to get your best possible refund and feel 100% confident in your taxes. TurboTax, all people are tax people.
Whitlock and Wiley, Eric Dickens is back with us. We're joined now by Fox NFL analyst TJ Houshmandzadeh. Time now for a big story. Let's move to Kyler Murray. We all know chose the NFL over Major League Baseball coming out of college, but now it sounds like he might reconsider. The Cardinals quarterback says he thinks he could play both football and baseball at the same time, adding that he would love to add the accomplishment to his resume. Reportedly, Murray's contract doesn't allow him to play baseball. All right, what do we think of this? Would Kyler Murray playing football and baseball at the same time be a good idea?
No, not actually doing it, but I love the confidence. I love that who's going to be the rookie of the year, Kyler Murray. has now carved out some mental space and said, physically, I'm able to do this. But why am I forced to choose? Why am I being marginalized even thinking through the process of choosing? But do I really want to see that actually come into reality? No, I don't. Because it's going to be hell to pay August, September, October, as Deion has showed us, if you try to balance both of those sports. But what he's saying as a premise is, I'm focused on football. I'm concerned that everyone wants me to choose when I actually have the ability to do both. But because I'm in a culture and a society that's going to look at one as a negative, I'm going to continue to play my primary sport, football.
For me, he shouldn't even be talking about this, really, to be honest with you. We know you can play both. That's why you were drafted in the top 10 of both. Athletically, we know you can do it. If you're that bored and you have nothing else to do, just go study next year's opponent. Get a head start on that. Because what happens is, as soon as you start to have bad games, if you was focused on football, you're not focused on football when you worried about, I could athletically, we know that. We know, they didn't force you to choose. You chose football over baseball. If you wanted to play both, you could have said, you know what, I want to try and play both. Probably would have been average at both because you really got, you can't. It's hard to play the quarterback position and be a hitter in baseball. You got to hit every day. You really got to. Deion, he was a corner. Deion didn't have to study. He can go lock somebody up. If the line does well, Bo Jack's going to get great yards. If they don't, he'll get good yards. It's different when you play quarterback and you have to know what everybody's doing. It's just a different dynamic.
I agree with you. It's hard to do both if you want to be great at one. And, you know, when you play sports, you want to be great at something. I think that he chose football because he got that $30 million guaranteed.
Hello.
I mean, they got to ride them buses, you know, stay in them crappy hotels and all that kind of stuff.
And you're going to be a free agent before.
And he got all the power in there because they gave up two. Look, they drafted Josh Rosen the year before they drafted him. So I got all the power. If I want to go play baseball, what you going to do? I'm going to play baseball. Mm. I mean, so I just don't think it's a great idea. He can do it, but he chose football because he loves football. He's from the state of Texas. Hey. You know, for Texas, you love football. He loves football, but that money's always, that's the factor. that's the factor.
I'm with TJ. I don't even like this coming out particularly right now. If he were coming off his second or third year in the league and had just been a Pro Bowler, one of the two or three best quarterbacks in the NFL, and his mind drifts to, hey, I could add to my resume by playing both sports, I would get it. Even if he is Rookie of the Year, Kyler Murray's got a lot of work to do. The Arizona Cardinals have a lot of work to do. Even just flirting in your mind with, let me add something to my resume, blah, blah, blah. When you talk about playing the quarterback position, I think it's dangerous. I do think it's an indication of maybe he does miss baseball. Maybe he is a little bored. Maybe football doesn't best suit him mentally, and that's why he's thinking about baseball. If I were the Cardinals, I'd just be a tiny bit concerned.
I think what doesn't fit him well is losing. When you're on a losing football team, baseball team, look, no offense, but the Cardinals is not a very good football team for a long time. I mean, and that starts at the top. I look at you go hire a guy out of college, Cliff Kingsbury from Texas Tech, who had Mahomes, who didn't win, but still you hire him as your head coach. And I look at, it's a whole nother, all these African-American coaches out there that's coaching the National Football League and don't get a job. And I'm a young quarterback. I'm like, I don't want to be able to just losing. I want to win. And I just put it, if nothing else, it's the threat of thinking about him leaving. Like, okay, we got to make some changes. Because we don't know what they're saying internally. He may want to, I want to do this. No, I don't want to do that. Well, okay, I'm going to go play baseball.
Yeah, I just don't want to paint it in the wrong direction in terms of, he's at the Super Bowl. And we know media at the Super Bowl. He's not bored. When you're at the media at the Super Bowl, they're going to ask you any and everything. And one of the questions, I'm sure, was baseball. And if you talk about him, he's the best rookie we had in NFL this year if he wins Rookie of the Year. That's what they say, offensive. Then you talk about, you have enough space in your mind where you can talk about things that you're not even going to do, but you're just like, okay, I could think through that process, but still my actions are going to go different. So I just look at a guy who's like thinking about next in the now, but he's still saying, I'm still focused on what my job is. And let's be respectful. He did his job very well, especially the second half of the season. First half of the season, he only had he had 5 games where he didn't even throw a touchdown. Last half, only one of those. He started to uptick. This doesn't mean he's distracted to me. It just means that, hey, you ask me about baseball in my world, this is where baseball is.
Yeah, I think, though, it could be a little overconfidence. And that's because even if they ask me, I'm just saying, man, I'm just starting off in this football thing. We got so much to accomplish in with the Arizona Cardinals. You know, that's a question I would address a couple, 2 or 3 years from now. And he's prohibited by contract from doing it.
Right, right.
I mean, for me, when you look at it athletically, yeah, I think I can do it. I would agree with that. And then you say, I would love to add that to my resume. You really thought about it. And then right now, though, I'm just focused on football. So down the line, I would really like to focus on football, become the best player you can be. And when you do that, if you want to talk about it, that's okay, because you're not looking like you're distracted, worried about baseball. You just finished your rookie season. You got a lot of work to do to bring the Arizona Cardinals to here before you start even thinking about, oh, right now, I'm just focused on football.
Whitlock and Wiley, TJ Houshmandzadeh and Rich Orenberger are back. Let's move to Antonio Brown, whose public meltdown continues after posting a video of himself berating police and the mother of his children. AB was dropped by agent Drew Rosenhaus yesterday, and today the troubled receiver posted a screenshot of text messages between Rosenhaus and himself. The messages offer of help from Rosenhaus, but AB added a couple of captions writing, quote, "Agent boy Ben Fraud set me up with a lot of bad workers, put me in this position," end quote. They try to tell you they help when you paying them. All right, does this post make AB or Drew Rosenhaus look good?
Nope, neither one of them looks good. One, this is the same old AB. He's gonna chew through his friends until they're his enemies. He does it all the time. Did it with Big Ben, did it with Juju, did it with Mayock, did it with Gruden, did it with Kraft, and now here you go, Drew. Welcome to the other side. The dark side when you talk about AB. So nothing there. Drew looks like a guy who just basically said, go get some help, because right now you can't help me. Conditionally, I would have more respect if he would have just dropped AB. Hey, you crossed my business ethics line. You know what? You as a person, I can't deal with. Get yourself some help, help yourself, and then help your career. But I can't be on board with that anymore. But the conditional part and the timing of it, because it's just right now fashionable to get on AB's case and criticize him. And you were a guy who was deeply invested in him personally, not just financially. I don't like that timing. It looks fraud, so neither one of them looks good.
I agree with you. This makes both parties look absolutely awful, but Drew Rosenhaus made a business decision. He runs a business. His business is representing talent. And right now he looks as AB and he says, how much is this talent going to bring as far as business goes? Now there's pros and cons to this. Positive side, he's not tethered to a star who's about to go supernova and turn into a black hole and drag people into the abyss with him. However, the con is the negative public relations this brings to the table. Now you have clients who are looking over the fence saying, what if I'm struggling? What if I'm out of league? What if I go through some issues with my baby mama and my agent's just going to turn his back on me? So that is the pros and cons of making a business decision and a difficult one, but that's exactly what this is as far as I'm concerned.
We're all in the same boat. It makes neither one look good, but for me, it makes Drew look the worst. Mm-hmm. You spend... Because I feel sorry for AB at this point. Nothing he does now is going to surprise me. And I feel sorry for him, because when you put me in this position, I've been around Chad. Chad was represented by Drew. And there's things, and Chad, why are you signing this deal? Drew said, we're going to get another deal in another year. I'm like, Chad, that's not going to happen. So, and if they don't give you a deal, we're going to force our way to get a deal. So I know those conversations have taken place. So I'm sure he was the battery pack being Drew Rosenhaus saying, AB, let's just do this. And AB listened to him. So now when I need you the most, and yes, I'm sure he's giving AB advice and he's not listening to it. Conditionally, you know what that means? You can't make me no money right now, so I ain't dealing with you. But as soon as you can make me some money,
holla,
I come right back to you. If I'm a player, I don't want Drew Rosenhaus as my agent now because of this. Just get rid of him. Sever the relationship. Right. We're not working together. But when he's at his worst, you're going to leave him. And the sad part is, if you cross Antonio Brown, he's just going to fire shots at you now. And that's the part that I feel sorry about, because I believe he's done playing football. I don't believe anybody's going to sign him because he's not listening to anybody. Drew, you should have stood by him, and this would have just boiled over. He wouldn't have played again. Mm. It would have been it.
Mm. I'm glad you all have gone after Drew Rosenhaus. It saves me the trouble, and it frees me to actually defend him in this case. I've been a longtime critic of Drew Rosenhaus. On this deal here, though, I just can't do it. I read the text, and I actually did think, okay, this kind of confirms what I thought, what Drew Rosenhaus was doing. You can't be someone's agent if they're not taking any of your advice. All you are is just, you might as well be Siri. You're not his agent. You're just someone that's just talking at AB. And I don't, he's sitting here saying, look, man, I'm going to help you with your grievances with the Patriots and the Raiders and blah, blah, blah. But it to me, if you're actually close to AB, you're sitting there like, golly, this guy is self-destructing at a rapid pace. What can I do to potentially shake him up and snap him out of this? And I think Drew just got to that point where, like, I got to pull away and maybe something will click. Because you just start grasping at straws. What can I do? And so I think this is Drew's attempt to do something. If I walk away, maybe that'll be the final straw and AB will snap out of it and realize he needs... Because I'm sure AB's dad, his mom, family, friends, whatever, everybody's trying something. This is just Drew's attempt.
I don't feel that. I really think that this is him making an attempt in court of public opinion to get some good attention from it. Like, it's bad to be in business with AB, so let me jump on that boat and say I'm not in business with AB anymore. But I'm still going to work on the grievances with you. But if you go get some help, which AB already said he's getting help. I don't know if it's working or not. Obviously, it doesn't look too good. But AB's been on record saying he is getting mental health adjusted and issues taken care of.
I got some help at McDonald's yesterday.
Hey, bro, I had the right help. Look. Hey, it takes his time.
But it felt good.
But you know what's serious about that, even though you say that? Look, I go to a therapist every week. It's just like physical health. You start bench pressing for 6 months, you're doing the pencil test. The pencil's still falling down. You ain't got no muscles yet. It takes time to dig and to give, if you're AB in these moments, to whoever you're working with as a therapist. But this situation, Drew, talking about I'm still going to work with you, and I may work with you again, but right now I can't mess with you because public opinion. That's sad.
The fact that you're getting mental health, right, that you're going and you're seeing somebody, I think is something that all former players at one point or another are continually throughout their post-career should do. Because this is a rough transition. When you go from a lot of hand-holding to none at all, and you go from humble beginnings like most of us to sudden wealth, life changes. It gets turned on its ear. And I think this is a rough transition, and we're seeing it played out loud in living color because AB's got Instagram Live and every other avenue that is paying attention to him. And that's his problem, but also it's a cry for help. I think he needs help grieving the loss of his career potentially and moving on from all this handholding he's received.
With Lachlan Wiley, TJ Houspenzada, and Rich Ohrenberger are back. All right, Darnell's off today. He's off to see the 49ers playoff game. Uncle Jimmy's filling in with his question of the day. A little bit afraid here. Uncle Jimmy, take it away.
Well, listen here, man.
Yeah.
Rumor is that last night, Uncle Jimmy went viral across the internet.
Did you?
Yeah, well, look, Uncle Jimmy been going viral since I've been about 11, 12 years old, so I ain't never had no problem with my viral lyrity. You know? If you don't believe me, ask the Blue M&Ms. They can testify to it. But anyway, listen. We talking about this LSU security guard that Odell Beckham slapped on the butt.
Yeah.
And they say that it spread across the internet like a case of gonorrhea. And I had that in the Marines in 63, and it wasn't too nice. But I want y'all to take a listen to what I had to say about this yesterday.
Lord,
and we can defend these millionaire athletes. But I guess the law enforcement officer making $40,000 a year, he ain't got no rights when he's doing his job. Only the millionaires are protected, right?
You make a point.
No, I mean, I'm just asking y'all a question. 2 years ago, wasn't I that security guard?
Yes, you were.
That's viral.
All right, guys.
That went viral.
Listen here. I need to know, and I want y'all to tell that. Let's be honest. What would the reaction be if the roles was reversed and the security guard had smacked Odell Jr.
Odell Jr.
What would happen if it was switched around and he smacked Odell?
Well, I think the conversation would be completely different. I think that's a fair question. And I think people would be talking about how out of line the police officer was. And if Odell pressed charges, I don't think anybody would complain because, you know, we do love to beat up law enforcement in today's media environment.
I think if the tables were turned, this would be the first time I heard about it because it would be a non-story. Because Odell Beckham, because of the media clout chase, has fueled this where the criticism or punishment doesn't fit the crime. If a security guard, which is not a public servant, which is not a police officer.
Why is a security guard not a public servant?
Just because of title. I don't know.
His job is to serve the public.
His job is to serve the private entity, if private security guard.
The man's job is to protect and serve.
You're a sheriff. Respect that. I'm respecting that. But this security guard, if he were to hit Odell Beckham Jr., one, this would have got lost in the championship experience. Oh, he's in on the parade. He's in on the party. So that's how that would have first been received. And even the security guard sworn a testimony of oath said this: I got hit Monday night and then Wednesday morning because of what I saw on the internet and I realized who it was, I decided to press charges. So that is a little bit of the ambulance chase. So a little bit of the celebrity kicked in, and he said, let me take a piece of this back in return for him embarrassing me. So if the tables were turned, maybe not a conversation at all.
But I look at this from the standpoint of both sides. Odell Beckham Jr. got caught up in the moment, and exactly. He did something silly. Keep your hands to yourself. Guy, girl, armed guard or not, there's no place for it in society. Yeah. Take a step into the shoes of the security guard. That's a guy who's not being paid anywhere near what Odell is. He's working a job that's high nerves. It's a national championship job. Game, and then all of a sudden, smoke detectors are going off because guys are enjoying cigars in the locker room, and they say, hey, Johnny, get in there and tell them to all put their cigars out. You know what Johnny, the security guard's doing? Oh, my gosh, are you kidding me? I'm going to go in there and tell them to put their cigars out? And then Odell Beckham Jr. makes it infinitely more difficult to do his job because he stripped him of any authority. It's just one of those plays where I think in this situation, it wasn't the guy with the gun on the hip with the power. Odell Beckham Jr. is in a locker room full of his peers. He's the highest paid man in that room. And he took advantage of a situation and got too caught up in the celebration.
What would be the reaction if he slapped Odell? The reaction would be however Odell approached it. Now, if you smack Odell and he turns around and a security guard is confrontational with the smack, then that reaction can go bad. If the energy of the security guard is, we're having fun,
right.
I think it's water under the bridge, water off a duck's back. It's not a big deal. And so looking at that clip, Odell was drunk.
Lit.
He was drunk and he was having fun. Did he go too far? Yeah, he shouldn't have done that. Mm-hmm. But now with the security guard pressing charges, it's, come on, man. There's nothing wrong with you. If anything, you were embarrassed. And if that's the case, Odell Beckham should apologize for embarrassing him.
Let's be clear here, though. He made a complaint. The state presses the charges. The state has the right to say, nah, there's nothing here. And again, that's why I go to, there's a lot of video of OBJ at this game. Mm-hmm. And it's clear he's out of pocket. We got pictures of him with his hands on one of the little dance line college girls. There's video of him taking the megaphone from the band director.
Dead wrong for that.
All that wrong.
He's wrong for taking the megaphone, but he ain't wrong for touching the person. What the hell wrong with y'all?
He said it was wrong.
Nigga, who? So what, the megaphone got press charges? He can grab a human being's ass, but he can. Come on, man.
We didn't say he wasn't wrong. We said it wouldn't be the story.
We said it wouldn't be the story.
But again, I think, with the security guard, trust me, I believe, just my years as a journalist, the state, the people in power around Louisiana is like, This guy was completely out of line all night.
Mm-hmm.
Drunk on the sidelines. Now he's done some action that have caused the NCAA to come down here and start asking questions. That's basically like calling the police down to your neighborhood. Nobody likes a snitch. This is the ultimate epitome of dry snitching. Then he's got his hands on a Gold Line girl. He's taking the megaphone from the band director and shouting out. He's drunk and out of control, and people in Louisiana are trying to shake this dude up in some kind of way. So I think they asked this, what can we do? How can we damage his brand in some way and shake him up and make this a bad scenario for him, because it was working for him as a social media play and brand building, and they got this guy to do this. But again, to Uncle Jimmy's point and question about would the reaction be different if a security guard or anybody in uniform slapped Odell on the butt, unwanted attention, hell yes, the reaction would be different. There's just no question about it. Everybody, the race cards would be being played, the whole nine yards, and Odell Beckham Jr. could, if he pressed charges, didn't press charges, no one would complain one way or the other. You just can't, look, you can't put your hands on people. If a little boy can't touch Russell Westbrook on a basketball court and everybody says Westbrook can scold him and the little boy's out of line, blah, 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 then hell, a grown man slapping another grown man while he's doing his job because the smoke detectors went off.
But it really depends on the body language. Like, if it's a confrontational, like, I'm not defending and saying, oh, Odell was like handing out the money. Dumb. If you really want to get guys money, do it in the locker room when ain't no cameras around.
Right.
If you really want to give it to them. But this incident here, it was.
How many times I have slapped you back there, backstage, in the butt, say, good show?
What? And if I turn around and see your body language ain't threatening, I'm going to be like.
And my body language is like, ha, ha.
Well,
it don't matter, man. That's your butt. My hand ain't got no business on your butt. My hand ain't got no business on your body.
Adrenaline after my school just won a national championship is different than backstage.
You know what's wrong about this? It's because we're trying to imply that there's going to be favorable treatment for Odell when actually in this context, his celebrity is coming back to haunt him, as you even laid it out. We have to give his brand, his antics, some medicine because he's bringing us a headache. So this whole implication or us trying to say that since the security guard makes 40K, that we should respect them less. That's not true. And we shouldn't have him have a higher likability because he makes less and he's doing a common job, which I catch a lot of people trying to do in code language. Just like with Odell being a millionaire, you shouldn't respect him more and you shouldn't like him less.
But
that's the conversation I think underlying.
I like
saying.
Rich's point though. Odell has all the power. All of it, all the
whatever
money
you gave him.
In that situation. It's his home court, his LSU locker room. And again, I do judge people on how they treat people that allegedly are beneath them or allegedly in service to them or in a position where they have less power than you. And Odell Beckham mocked this dude. And again, if you go tie all of his behavior, from putting his hands on a little girl to taking the megaphone, that was an entitled millionaire walking around drunk, treating everybody like I'm Odell Beckham Jr. and how dare you try to prevent me from doing anything. And I don't blame the people in Louisiana who actually probably care about Odell taking some action trying to shake him up. Whitlock and Wiley, Eric Dickerson and TJ Husmanzada are back. All right, let's move to Carolina. The NFL Network's Ian Rappaport says he believes the Panthers are likely to trade Cam Newton, and I've been campaigning all week for the Panthers to do everything in their power to land Joe Burrow. But according to Burrow's father, Jim, the Heisman winner is ready to accept his fate of being drafted by the lowly Bengals.
If you're the top pick or one of the top picks, you know, that's the way the NFL draft is set up. You're not going to get picked by a team that has a great record. So, you know, he's excited to even be in that conversation. And if the Bengals do draft him, he's going to be happy. And, you know, he's always been, you've probably seen some of his interviews. He's very confident. And, you know, he'll look at it as a challenge, but he'll be confident that eventually they can win a lot of games there at Cincinnati.
All right. Would it be a mistake for Joe Burrow to settle for his home state Bengals.
Man, no, not at all. Settle should never be in the same sentence as you living out your dreams. One, to make it to the NFL is just a dream. Then you add the fantasy level because he's going to be the number one overall pick. And then it becomes unbelievable because you're going to do it in your hometown, like 3 hours away from the crib. Love the father for just like putting out all this noise before he even grows, before he even gets too loud of saying, just doing an interview in Montreal. He's just like, oh, with the fierceness and with the fluidity and with the speed of, my son is happy to go here easily. It's a lowly situation now that could flip on its head quickly. The San Francisco 49ers had a lowly situation in down times. And then now, right now, they're on the brink of being in the Super Bowl. So this is a situation where if you believe in Joe Burrow, who certainly believes in himself, if anyone's ever met Joe Burrow, not lacking in confidence to go there and turn things around at the crib.
Would it be a mistake? That's a tough question, man. I wouldn't even compare them to the 49ers because the 49ers have had success and they'll go down and they'll have success. Only team that might be beneath the Bengals are the Browns. Like, they've been worse than the Bengals consistently. It's hard. I know. I've talked to people that said Carolina's going to try to get him, that Joe Brady really wants him. I know that to be fact. I don't know Joe Burrow. I'll get to know him as he starts preparing for the draft. But what I will say is the people that I've talked to him that know him, this doesn't surprise me. They say this dude is full of confidence. Mm-hmm. It doesn't he's looking at it like, man, the Bengals are in the basement. Not if. When I bring him to the top, look how I'm going to look. I'm just a guy for the job. That's his mentality.
You played for Mike Brown and the Bengals, and you're not answering the question. Would it be a mistake for Joe Burrow to settle for the Bengals?
When it comes to settle, like Joe Burrow was
Would you try to force your way to another team?
Would I try to force my way to another
team? I love how you answer.
Because I'm serious. I'm going to repeat it.
TJ,
No, I wouldn't. If I'm Joe Burrow, and the reason I wouldn't, because he believes – I'm going to turn it around.
What would you believe?
If Carson couldn't do it, I don't think anybody can do it.
Man, hell no. You need to go there. Let me tell you something, brother. These bad organizations, I played for one. Mm-hmm. Indianapolis Colts. Mm-hmm. Man, let me tell you something. They can be career killers. You said it best. I mean, you played for the Bengals. You're a great player for the Bengals. But if you'd have played someplace else, you'd be even greater. I mean, with a better quarterback. It's the truth.
Than Carson Palmer?
Carson Palmer was good, but how good would Carson Palmer? How good would Carson would have been with Andy Reid? How good would he have been with?
Well, you can't do this matchmaking like that.
Forget that.
You have a point.
Thank you.
Oh, he knows. They spend money in Cincinnati.
Hey, can I finish?
This ain't okay. I'll let you finish. Hall of Famer. I'm about to say, come on, man.
Man, first, I mean, give you even a good example, a better example. John Elway. You like John Elway?
Love it.
John Elway would not go to the Indianapolis Colts. Now, let's just say... Baltimore Colts at the time. Let's say John Elway would have played for the Baltimore Colts.
Bob Irsay.
I guarantee you, it wouldn't be the John Elway that we know right now. My old teammate, Jeff George. Jeff George is probably one of the most talented quarterbacks you've ever played with, ever seen. Talented. Nobody to coach him. No help. No offensive line. I won't forget, we played the Giants in a Thursday night game. They were getting in the backfield so fast.
I was at the game.
Jeff say, man, Eric, I'm just going to throw this ball. I say, thank you, Jesus.
Hey, Eric, thanks for the history lesson and bashing the Colts, because when Peyton Manning went there, was that hurting him? Did it hurt him?
Wait, hold on.
Did it hurt him?
You know who ran the team then? Jim Irsay. Okay, not Bob Irsay.
And people got Bill Polian. That's my point. So the organization can make moves to change the culture, and you can bring in a player.
The general manager of the Browns.
Well, y'all talking about Cincinnati when they had the slanted field in the 90s. I know, Cincinnati was lowly. But this team and this organization spends money, new stadium, 2000, 12 wins, three, 4 years ago, and they had four consecutive double-digit win seasons. Like, things can change when you get the right player.
And the crazy thing about the Bengals, if you look at their roster, Jonah Williams didn't play their first-round pick from Alabama. He'll come back and play. Cordy Glenn should play. If they re-sign A.J., they going to have lot of skills. No.
TJ, just because I want to tap into your knowledge of the Bengals, and I'm not asking you to badmouth Mike Brown.
I'm going
to
be honest.
Yeah, I know. Mike Brown, compared to other NFL owners, Where does he rank?
It seemed, where does he rank? It seems
at
to
the
be,
bottom.
It's different. I will say
that. I'm not going to ask you to bash him, but at the bottom.
But this is what when I got there, it was, I thought that was normal. And then when Marvin came in, he changed things. And Mike Brown will tell you, like,
thank you.
He thought this is how things operated. When Marvin came in and said, no, this is not how it is on other teams, he started to change things. And Joe is the guy, I don't know him. I'm going to get to know him, like I said.
Mm-hmm.
They say this dude confidence is like, man, oh, I'm going to go to the Bengals and turn it around.
The other guys on the defense, they got confidence too.
John Elway had a lot of confidence too.
Eli
Manning.
He knew, man, I'm not finna go there.
Yep. But I mean, hey, TJ, did those checks cash? All of them did, huh? Guess what? That's step one. He ain't the worst. Did y'all have facilities?
Okay. Yes, you did.
Okay. I'll go back to that. The chest cash, yeah. When I was in Indianapolis, the chest cash, but boy, I couldn't wait to get the hell out of there and take a $1 million pay cut. And I wish I'd get that money back. But I said, man, I want to get out of here. I can't take this no more. When you losing with a bad, bad, bad organization, this kid is talented. I mean, he could do some great things in the National Football League if he's on the right team with the right people at the top.
And he's looking at it like, if I do it in Cincinnati, sky's the limit.
Okay,
and that's how he's looking at it.
I agree with that. Just like Peyton did in Indianapolis. But let's just say he doesn't do it. It's going to be boo, boo. The daddy going to be something like, damn, what was I thinking?
Hey, but you wouldn't think you're going somewhere and going to fail. We all athletes. We never think we're going to go anywhere and fail.
But when you're in the NFL, you have to be realistic. You look at your roster, you're like, man, you look at who you're playing. Boy, I like to say we're going to beat them, but let's be for real.
The commitment of the organization, the class of the organization. Again, if you won't even hire a general manager, and again, you think you're the Jerry Jones of Cincinnati, it's a recipe for disaster. And if I'm Joe Burrow and can escape that and potentially get to the richest owner in football, David Tepper, my offensive coordinator, Joe Brady, Matt Rhule, who just did some great things at Baylor, I'd rather do that than hop on that Cincinnati bandwagon. You know,
He would prefer that. I'm sure he would.
Yeah.
If he could still go number one.
Yeah, yeah. And they may have to do that. All right, before we go, I'd like to suggest we all tap our brakes on demonizing Major League Baseball as Commissioner Rob Manfred and the league deal with the game's latest cheating scandal. I get the temptation to connect the steroid dots of the late 1990s to the signing stealing dots of today and all of baseball's gambling scandals and conclude baseball is shadier than football, basketball, hockey, and golf. It's not. Baseball's no different from the rest of society and the rest of the entertainment industry. The more money we pour into an industry, the more temptation to skirt the rules exists. The Bible says the love of money is the root of all kinds of evil. We love money in this society. It's our obsession. We think the people with lots of it are a higher form of human being than the people with a limited supply. I contend the man with the most money is oftentimes the man willing to cut the most corners to get it. Why does baseball seem to have the most cheating scandals? Because baseball players make the most money. They're dealing with the most temptation. It's not the game, it's the money. Bryce Harper has a 13-year, $330 million contract. Would you come up with an elaborate scheme to steal signs if part of the reward was moving closer to a $300 million contract? I'm not letting baseball off the hook here, but I don't want to act like baseball or baseball players have lower integrity than any other sport or athlete. They don't. They play a sport that's a bit more easy to manipulate through technology. Having cameras everywhere increase the temptation to cheat and the players succumb. Trust me, football, basketball, hockey, golf, and tennis players are doing everything they can think of to extend their careers so they can make as much money as possible. If the top NFL and NBA players made $200,000 a year, Tom Brady and LeBron James would be retired. I'm not accusing Brady and James of cheating. I'm saying money and television have dramatically changed the culture of sports. Temptation to cheat has never been higher. I'm not surprised baseball is once again in the crosshairs. Whitlock and Wiley, TJ Husmanzadeh and Rich Ohrenberger are back. Let's move to Santa Clara, where Jimmy Garoppolo and the 49ers host Aaron Rodgers and the Packers in Sunday's NFC Championship game on Fox. According to Fox Bet, San Francisco is favored by 7.5 points. But according to Aaron Rodgers, the Packers have the 49ers exactly where they want them.
You know, I think if you look at this game, they're definitely favored by, what, 7.5, Tom, is that right? So they're, you know, obviously expected to hold court and win, and people know and are talking about how we played the last time. So I think if you look at pressure, the pressure is in a certain place, and we should be nice and loose.
All right, anybody buying that the pressure on the 49ers is an advantage for the Packers?
Nope, not at all. Crazy. No athlete in athletic history ever raises their hand and says, I want to be the underdog. I want to be the one that actually no one thinks is going to win. I want to be the lesser of the two. So stop with that. You are rationalizing once you are placed in that category of being the underdog, but no one wants to be in that position. So then, because of your rationalization, you start doing mental gymnastics. Start saying stuff like that. Oh, they feel all the pressure and all that. You know what? In reality, when you get on that field, you feel the pressure the same because you want to execute. All this, well, outwardly, what they think we're going to do and not going to do doesn't make plays. So this is just a rationalization that a lot of people use, a lot of people buy. But I'm telling you, it's just all a hoax.
You know, look, as a quarterback, you are a part-time player. You are a full-time face of an organization, and the best ones are great politicians. This is tremendous spin. They're bigger than you. They're better than you. Well, we're feistier. You know what I mean? Like, this is one of those deals where, yeah, maybe they're favored, but we're loose. He just took this political football and he tried to make it the advantage of the Packers because they're behind the eight ball, maybe the less talented team going into this matchup.
Yes, yeah, it's no advantage for the Packers. It's for Aaron Rodgers, it's a cushion to fall back on when we lose. Oh, they're favored by 7.5.
Right, right.
Now, Aaron Rodgers is going back to 2005. It's really pressure on him. 2005, when you draft Alex Smith over me, now I can prevent you guys from going to a Super Bowl. My hometown team, that's pressure for him because you best believe if they win this game, that's going to be in the back of his mind during the game. If it's a close game, that's going to be in the back of his mind. So I could argue there's more pressure on Aaron Rodgers because he knows it's a team that passed him up to draft Alex Smith.
I think a lot of athletes actually like pressure, actually like having high expectations. And so I don't see it as advantage either. And then the other thing that I think that Aaron Rodgers is maybe he knows and he's just not commenting on, but the other thing that's unique here is 49ers are a really young team, young head coach. They're not feeling the pressure. Richard Sherman maybe, but everybody else, this is all a brand new experience. This is some pressure they're embracing. We're in the NFC Championship game. We get a chance to get make history, blah, blah, blah. There's really only two people, Richard Sherman on the other one side and Aaron Rodgers on the other side, that like are veterans, legacies kind of on the line. Richard Sherman's a Hall of Famer, but he could really elevate himself by going with another team to a Super Bowl. But there's no real pressure on the 49ers, and whatever pressure there is actually good for a young team, in my opinion.
Yeah, it's interesting that, like, coaches used to always tell us that pressure is applied internally. So there's always these outside thoughts and expectations and favored, and all that stuff is always going on. But what you feel is going to be the pressure. And the kryptonite to that pressure is your preparation, your confidence. So who cares what you think, what you're saying? I'm going out there and doing. And I think it's funny Aaron Rodgers knows all that, but like you said, Rich, he's just got put in a position where this is the only thing I can sell right now. So he's going to sell hope. And if he doesn't, like you said, he's going to fall back on reality.
All right, Uncle Jimmy.
Yes, sir.
Darnell's off today. What can you tell us about the Super Six this weekend?
All right, here's what I got for you, big fella. All right, before the Packers and the 49ers kick off this Sunday, Lord. Hey, we want to ask that you download the Fox Sports Super 6 app and play for free for a chance to win $25,000 of Terry Bradshaw's money.
Gotcha.
Now, Whitlock, Wiley, help the fans win some money. One of the questions is, man. Well, who's going to win and what's going to be the score?
I'm picking the 49ers 35-28.
33-18 49ers. How'd you ever read the Miranda rights?
I made sure you understood it.
Jimmy.
What?
You have the right to remain silent.
Please. I just ain't got the capability.
Uncle Jimmy's here to help us talk about our approval ratings for Andy Reid.
You.
Yeah.
You.
Oh. But first, who's the big dummy of the day?
Yeah. The big damn of the day goes to the person that sat up here and heard the name Jeff George and lost all control and just went, we know you played high school ball with him, nephew, but good Lord.
Mm-hmm.
Control yourself.
Man. Big old. Yeah, I know. Big Eric old. Dickerson knows what I know. Jeff George should be in the Hall of Fame. All right, let's talk Andy Reid, whose Chiefs face off with the Titans, play Travis's Titans, in the AFC Championship game Sunday. This will be Reid's 7th conference championship game, but he's only made it to the Super Bowl one time with the Eagles in 2004, or the 2005 Super Bowl. Marcellus,
yes, sir.
Do you think this will be Reid's last shot at a Super Bowl?
Oh, hell no.
Nah. Yeah, I agree with that.
Patrick Mahomes retiring?
Yeah.
Like, what's going on? Got the best young quarterback outside of Lamar Jackson out there for the next decade or so. No, this is going to be a continual appearance in the AFC Championship. Continuous. Every single year, they're going to be up in there.
I'll say this. If he loses, this is his second to last shot at a Super Bowl. he's definitely back next year as long as Patrick Mahomes there. Chiefs are a candidate. Yep. All right, Uncle Jimmy.
Yes, sir.
Big weekend for us Kansas City Chiefs fans. What's your take on Andy Reid?
Nephew, when it, what day in your life is not a big day? You talking about this weekend. Listen here, man.
It is.
They say that today is the present. That's why it's called a gift.
Oh.
So what I mean, Andy Reid just got the biggest gift in Kansas City Chiefs history. They had the that means that the New England Patriots just got knocked out the playoffs.
Yep.
Lamar Jackson, the MVP, he knocked out the playoffs.
Yep.
And most importantly, my nephew, Jason Whitlock, ain't picked them to win yet. So therefore, the football guys have yet to turn against them yet.
You're correct. I'm staying away from
them. Now, look here. Hold up. Listen. Remember Aunt B from Mayberry?
Yeah.
Remember she used to say, Andy!
right.
Okay, listen to me. Boy, don't mess this up. Okay, Andy, I know you think I'm playing, okay? Look here, Andy, you the pilot that's landing this plane. Okay, so failure's not an option at this time. Okay?
Yeah.
Listen to what I'm trying to say. We got lives at stake here.
Yes, we do.
Meaning your life.
Your captain speaking.
Because if you don't win this game, you're going to find a whole new pack of Chiefs fans waiting on you. Lined up on I-70, showing your ass out of Kansas City.
Yeah, right.
Look, I understand how much Kansas City love you right now. But let me tell you who else Kansas City used to love. Lynn Elliott. Bono. Carl Peterson.
Yeah.
Hey, man, he used to be a little colored kid, fresh out of college, used to write for the Kansas City Star. Little fat kid. Oh, Jason Whitlock. Yeah. Look, I'm just trying to tell you, Andy. Look, man, don't get your face added to the Kansas City Wall of Shame. Okay? Listen to what you need to do. Look, just go into this game like you did back when you was 12 years old at that punt, kick, and pass contest.
You won that.
Remember how you went in there and beat up all them little kids? You know, you was what, 6'3", 280, 12 years old? He a little smaller than you was at that age, nephew. Okay, you remember how he just went in and just destroyed all them little kids' dreams?
Yes, I do remember that.
That's what he need to do this weekend. He walks in with that mentality, it's a wrap. We got it, we hitting it, we quitting it, we out. There it is.
None of
a one-hitter quitter. Let's do it.
Tennessee Titans, I agree.
There
Andy,
you go.
A lot
ain't
of
no
pressure
excuse.
On you this weekend.
Let's go
get it done.
Go get it.
I've moved him up 3 points in my approval rating. And ready to take him to GOAT status if we win this weekend. I've got Andy at a 75, up a point in job performance, up 2 points in authenticity. Andy, I'm rooting for you, but I'm coming to get you if we lose.
All right. I already had him at GOAT status. I did move him up in terms of character because of what they did in that comeback. Nobody panicked. Respect for his body of work, which has him at GOAT status. Obviously, it's a slam dunk Hall of Fame. If he goes,
he ain't won a Super Bowl yet. He ain't going no Hall of Fame.
Doug Peterson won one, and it don't matter.
Mill ain't even in the Hall of Fame yet.
Yo, gotta have it all, baby.
All-star status, the internet says 67%.